Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast hosted by two great people, legends in the podcast industry and abroad, Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
And me, Andrew Levins. Every single week we read all of the prior week's comics and let you know which of the ones were good and bad and the ones that we really think you should go out of your way to be reading too. We are currently on Christmas hours, which means we are 1 week behind. So we're recording this even though we've got the weeks for this week's... This is going to get confusing.
Yeah.
Basically... We're reading the book, the comics, we're reviewing the comics that came out the week just before Christmas.
Yes.
January's going to be a little bit of a mess, and it's going to result in one bizarre mega episode where we have to record 2 weeks at once. So look forward to that, Siobhan.
I think that's going to be fun. I think that's going to be fun for everyone.
I hope you had an incredible holiday season. Yourself too, Siobhan.
Oh, thank you. As I am, either of the listeners, but both. Yeah, I hope everyone had a nice time.
No, only one. Either the listeners or you can have a good holiday season. Who will it be?
I'm very selfless, so I choose the listeners because that's what Jesus would have done.
You are someone that likes to give like geeky comic book presents to your loved ones.
Yeah.
Or your loved one. do you get them in return?
No, I think my family choose to ignore it, the fact that I like comic books, because it's a bit like... hard for them to figure out what I want. Like, I got one of the the DK like encyclopedias.
Yeah,
I got like a DK encyclopedia of the DC universe, which is cool. That's useful. Yeah. It charts year by year when everything came out. That was about the geekiest.
And it's really heavy. If you ever need to weigh down a bent comic, you can just put that on top of it.
Exactly. It's perfect. The perfect gift.
Very, very useful. Yeah, my family just. Get me completely practical dad presents now.
Nice, just barbecue tongs.
Yeah, and I even like, this is like such a stupid story of like, you know, when you have kids, you don't really like Christmas isn't for you anymore.
No.
So I bought myself my present.
Nice.
From my wife this year.
Great.
And I bought the wrong thing. So I bought myself a new wallet. And so I bought a wallet, and then on Christmas night, I put all my cards in it. I was like, this is way too heavy. You know, like when you can see, like, a guy's wallet, like, throbbing, like Batman's dick through his costume. I didn't want that going on. So I went and I took it back today. I took my own Christmas present back that I bought myself back, and I couldn't even blame it on somebody. And then I found the wallet that I did like, and then I saw the packaging, and I was like, oh, wait, I've got one of those. So I just now have a credit voucher for the store because I already had a wallet in my drawer that I forgot about.
That's the best present of all.
Merry Christmas to me.
You know what was a good geeky present that I got is my partner, Nate, made me a Lego model of the Teen Titans tower.
Holy shit. Can you put pictures of that somewhere?
I'll show you at some other point. But yeah, it's pretty great.
Is it good?
It's really good. He once, a couple of years ago for my birthday, he tried to cross stitch, like needlepoint, a little Teen Titans tower for me, but it was way harder than he expected, so it's half finished. And then this year he made a Teen Titans tower, which is surrounded by other things from our life and relationship.
Oh
That's really cute.
That's the best present ever.
It's so good. I love it so much. It's the best.
I now have a new family, and that is podcast listeners that I've bonded with because of the podcast.
Yeah,
and
our real family.
I got Christmas presents from someone.
Aw, that's so nice.
So I have to give a shout out to the work teen, Connor, who sent me...
The wokest teen of all.
Yeah, on a day or two after Christmas, I received an email from them, which was a series that we've spoken about heaps of times that we've never read properly, and that's Jeff Lemire's Bloodshot Run.
Oh, cool.
Which is a really, really, really thoughtful digital download for that entire series, which is a very, very thoughtful gift.
That's very kind of them.
Connor really listens.
He's a great listener, a great contributor. Just a great teen.
And also Jack, who is one of the Hey Fam listeners, got a cartoonist from Adelaide to draw me.
I saw that. That's unbelievable. It's so good.
So I'm saying it here. Don't tell them if you ever see my family in person. But I'm not celebrating Christmas with them next year. I'm celebrating Christmas with the listeners who know me better than my own family now. Although it would be pretty funny if I had to buy wallets for myself on behalf of every listener of this podcast next Christmas.
There's so many wallets now.
Oh, wait, I have all of these at home already. Siobhan, that was an incredible rant. A great intro. But the bulk of this show is about comic books, and we're not given a break at the end of last year. Well, it still is last year, technically. But... Yeah, at the end of 2017, the publishers did not give us a break for Christmas. Even though our lives got infinitely busier, we still had to read almost 50 comic books. And I somehow managed to read all the ones I intended to read.
I missed a couple.
Fuck it, who cares? It's Christmas.
Who cares, guys?
So we begin every show by reviewing all of last year's number ones. And I just want to just say, holy moly, they're back. They had some time off. But the kings of number ones, comic book number ones, are back.
Oh, yeah.
With their first number one double up in, I'm going to say, over a month. This is insane. I never thought they would take the crown once again. For kicking off this edition of First Things First is the two number ones from the one and only Marvel Comics.
The one and only.
After going to legacy renumbering, we didn't get a number one from them for a while. And now we've got two. And I'm going to give you a little bit of a spoiler of what I thought of these in advance of our review. I really love both of these books.
That's great news.
They are X-Men Grand Design, written and drawn by Ed Piskor, and Marvel 2-in-1, number one as well, by Chip Zdarsky and Jim Cheung. So let's talk about X-Men Grand Design first, because this was an incredible highlight to my comic book reading week.
I only read half of it.
Holy fuck.
I was trying to read it just before we started recording, but I didn't get through it. It's a lot of content.
It is. It's an enormous read. I read it over three nights, like the three busiest nights of the year, like Christmas Eve, Christmas night, and Boxing Day night. I read it and fell asleep, after reading only four pages or whatever. Eventually, I got through it all. But X-Men Grand Design is like a retelling of... the X-Men's long history, written and drawn by Ed Piskor, who's best known for the Fantagraphics series Hip Hop Family Tree, in which he tells the actual real life history of many rappers and people in the New York hip hop scene in the 80s. Maybe he's up to the 90s by now. I don't know. I checked out a little while ago from that series. But X-Men Grand Design, is basically he has this incredible kind of throwback golden silver age kind of style that suits a retelling of the classic X-Men silver age strips, he even colors the pages so they look like an old silver age book. There's an extensive use of Bende dots in his artwork,
and it looks like it's been printed on newspaper stock.
That's right.
It's the vibe.
But because in doing that, a lot of people will talk about his writing in this, which I think is really, really great, effortlessly kind of updating while still being true to what a Silver Age comic will sound like, will read like. And his art is really, really solid the whole way through. But I just want to give a very big shout out to the colors on this book, because every single book has been like stained yellow so it looks like newspaper. But then that allows for some incredible contrast in the art where he leaves some parts of the book like, you know, an explosion or something radiating as an unstained piece of paper.
Yeah, so it's like really you get these pops.
Incredible, yeah, really popping kind of bright whites in some of the panels. That really made this like just a very unique book.
It's a bizarre read because it's like firmly based in X-Men continuity. Like if you're one of the people who's like, I just want to know what the hell is going on with the X-Men from the beginning, which people come into Kings all the time, like I just want to start X-Men from the beginning. And we're like, no, you don't. So if you just want like a chronological, here's the X-Men, then this is for you, I suppose. I don't think like, I definitely enjoy his style. I don't think it's necessarily especially golden agey, like it's very contemporary.
Silver Age, I mean.
But
yeah.
Then sort of put into this Silver Age context, I suppose.
I mean the whole thing being narrated like in great detail by the Watcher, that's a very Silver Age trope.
Yeah, that's true.
And like you know, and how dense it is too with information. I do like that like yeah, like it is a lot of the beats that we've read many times and even seen in the X-Men movies before, but he is taking great liberties to kind of have the various X-Men characters meet in new and different ways that we haven't seen in comics before.
And have it and also, like, all these sort of stories which have never really been connected and have been really disparate, he's kind of linking them all with one overarching narrative, which is pretty clever, considering how much X-Men history there is.
Yeah, absolutely. I really, really enjoyed this. This was an incredible, just it's one of those comics that I can't believe exists because it feels like this goes up against, you know, every minute someone on the internet is writing a think piece about everything that Marvel's doing wrong, and they describe, you know, the synergy that Marvel's having with their movies and how that's negatively affecting the comics, and this just feels like this like real treasure that I can't believe is being put out by the same Marvel that makes many mistakes throughout the year.
Yeah, totally.
The fact that it's like it's only $5.99, it's this enormous, like, you know, this will take you. I'm pretty sure this one issue took me an hour to read.
Yeah, it's incredibly dense, guys. It is worth the price of admission.
And there's another one coming out in like it's a fortnightly book.
And it's only two issues. Am I correct?
Oh, is it two issues?
That's I thought it was just a two issue little mini series.
In any case, it's a real treat, and it's a beautiful one issue. If you're one of those people that, like, you know, buys mostly digital or mostly trade, and every now and then likes to splurge on a single issue, I would definitely recommend this one as one just to pore over. The art's wonderful,
and there aren't even that many ads.
It's really unique. Yeah, the only ads are for other Marvel comics.
Yeah,
which is great. They're the kind of ads I like. That and weird cereals. I love a good cereal.
Absolutely, I miss Fruity Pebbles. I never understood what that was.
You ever had them?
No.
They're like, what they're if terrible. Cornflakes were made of Fruit Loop?
Oh.
Yeah.
They're pretty good.
Yeah, they are good. Shouts to Fruity Pebbles. If any of American listeners want to make us happy, send us a box.
Yeah.
We also got another number one from Marvel this week, and that was the return of the Marvel 2-in-1 imprint. And this time, 2-in-1 refers to The Thing and the Human Torch, the only two members of the Fantastic Four who are still in current continuity because the Richards family are MIA somewhere after Secret Wars.
Yeah, who knows? Who knows where they're all gone? But it's weird that the assumption is that they're dead from everyone.
Yeah, I feel like they take. Yeah, I don't remember that because we know for a fact they're not. But yeah. I guess everyone else doesn't in the Marvel universe because they don't read their own comics. The idiots.
What a bunch of dummies.
This is written by Chip Zdarsky. Best known for his artwork on Sex Criminals and his runs on Howard the Duck and what the fuck is the Spider-Man book he writes called?
Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, I believe.
Mouthful. He's done some great stuff. He's done some stuff that I haven't been as big a fan of. And knowing that, you know, we are getting a Fantastic Four book back, I've been wondering who they're going to get at Marvel to write that. You know, one of the things that most relieving things for me about Bendis moving to DC was that he won't be the one to write Fantastic Four because I don't want to know what that would be like.
Well, I mean, he's probably going to be writing Superman, right? Is that correct?
That's seems to be the way. And also he's home after his health scare, which is very good.
Thank goodness.
there are definitely some characters that I love the idea of Bendis writing, but Fantastic Four aren't those characters. Mm. And so, yeah, I mean, like, wondering who Marvel are going to put on it. And, you know, having read almost everything Zdarsky's done, I wouldn't have picked him for the job, but if this is his, like, you know, his test in order to pass this exam to then go on to write Fantastic Four, oh, this is an awesome job. This is a really, really great comic about the Thing kind of being convinced to look after Johnny Storm. Victor Von Doom shows up and gives him something that Reed left to him should he and his family ever disappear from the Earth. This book was drawn by Jim Chung with inks by John Dell and Walden Wong with colors by Frank Martin. It looks fantastic.
I love Jim Chung.
Of course, he's maybe like the secret best artist that Marvel have in their stable.
Yeah, I don't understand why they don't use him.
I think because he takes ages.
That's why. this was a really. I really enjoyed this. I did. I sometimes think that Chip Zdarsky misses the mark slightly when he's being sort of sincere and sentimental. I think that sometimes it comes across a little bit cliche and cloying, but I did like this. And I like the way he writes. I think Ben Grimm is one of those characters that you can really miss the mark with, getting the voice right, and I think he nails it.
Yep, me too. I totally agree with you with the sincerity thing. Like, even the Star-Lord run that he did that I quite liked overall, there were schmaltzy moments of that, but I think this is like the best balance of like good chuckles and then like quite a warm character-based story. One criticism is that Johnny Storm is losing his powers for some reason, and I just feel like we've gotten a lot of that in the last year, and I don't need him to be happening that too. So hopefully that's just sort of quickly and it's resolved.
Yeah.
But if this leads to Fantastic Four being reunited and then Zdarsky, you know, off the back of this one issue, I would totally read his take on Fantastic Four.
Yeah, totally. I just got really distracted by the in the little backup that tells you like the history of the Fantastic Four and how gigantic Sue Storm's boobs are. Who drew that? Is it? Yeah. Oh, you know what? I think it's Greg Land. That's
which porn star do you think he copied that from? Oh, that's so funny. So over to Valiant now for a number one that was written by Daniel Kibblesmith with art by the great Kano, and doing some of the most like awesome, innovative panel layouts I've ever seen Kano do, actually. This is the return of Quantum and Woody, which is kind of like somewhat a cult kind of beloved Valiant franchise that at one point, you know, in the 90s, I think, was written by Christopher Priest. Quantum and Woody are about two brothers through adoption who have some weird mysterious power that requires them to like basically give each other a fist bump every day or they'll turn back into energy. I'm sorry if I got that wrong. This is the first ever Quantum and Woody book I've ever read, and they were quite vague.
They have to clang their bracelets together.
Yeah. They were quite vague on how they got their powers, what their powers are, but that was fine because this is a very funny, character-based superhero book that's more about the relationship of these two brothers that have kind of grown to hate each other because they are, you know, at each other's necks all the time through superhero heroics.
They're just different. One of them's a square and the other one's real uptight. Classic.
One of them's a square and one of them's uptight.
No, wait, the other way around.
They sound pretty similar to me.
Yeah, sorry. One of them is an uptight square and the other is a really loose rectangle.
This episode is called A Really Loose Rectangle. Every now and then one just jumps out and you just got to write it down.
I really enjoyed this. I have to say, I've enjoyed other Quantum and Woody runs more. This one didn't have like the same level of gags for me as the most recent one from Valiant. I can't think of who wrote that though, so I might just look that up.
That was it was like the fourth book or whatever that came out once Valiant came back, you know, 6 or so years ago. So is that in a similar kind of frame of like Archer and Armstrong as being like a straight up comedy book?
Yeah, it was absolutely just a comedy book.
This one definitely has some drama to it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Having had no experience with this character, with these characters, just kind of seeing them show up every now and then in all the Valiant books I've read, I really enjoyed the beginnings of this story. There's a mystery involving both their fathers.
Oh, they were created by Christopher Priest. Continue.
Oh, they were created. Oh, that's wild. Crazy. God, Christopher Priest is great. I'm going to talk about him later in this episode. I think for me, this is just like just Kano doing, you know, after loving the artwork on Secret Weapons so much, this actually reminded me a lot of that, just the similar kind of
absolutely
weirdly structured, but very fun and frantic kind of panel layout and structure. I don't really associate Kano with being a guy that does that. So
I don't know what else has he done.
He's one of those names that I recognize as, I've definitely seen his name on lots of comic books, but I couldn't remember any art, whereas I'll remember this forever as something he did.
Well, the run that I really liked was written by James Asmus. I really highly recommend checking that one out. It made me laugh a lot.
Okay, cool. I will do. Once I read all of the Bloodshot.
All of Bloodshot. One
that Connor gave me. So a while ago, we talked about a new imprint that was started by an ex-Vertigo editor called Shelley Bond. Over at IDW, the imprint is called Black Crown. We got a series out of it, first and foremost, that was written by Peter Milligan, called, what was it called again?
Kid Lobotomy.
Kid Lobotomy, that I did not like at all. It was kind of like it was a very, you know, I think they would be very aware of how polarizing a book like that would be. So it was a strange choice for their first number one. It definitely, I guess, as like as a mission statement, like, you know, this is going to be a left of center comic book. It did its job. But they also put out a quarterly book that kind of revealed all the other titles. And the title that I was the most excited about was one written by Teenie Howard with art by Gabriel Hernandez. Gilbert Hernandez. There is a Gabriel Hernandez too, right? But this book is called Assassinistas. Gilbert Hernandez, being one of the brothers responsible for Love and Rockets, which is one of my favorite series, in all of his kind of outside of Love and Rockets stuff, he's done lots of very pulpy girls with guns fighting zombies kind of mini series. And I assumed that this is just going to be one of those. You know, those are fun to read. Mm. There's not much substance to them compared to his other stuff in Love and Rockets. And from the first three pages, that's exactly what I thought we were going to get, as we see a bunch of three girls who call themselves the Assassinistas, a trio of girls who are assassins, kicking butt assassins. After the title page, we suddenly jump forward in time. We learn that one of them is pregnant. She already has a kid. Another one has a kid and is kind of like struggling to pay the bills and now is working in kidnapping insurance. And the third Assassinista is, no one knows where she is. And we kind of get this very different book that's about these women who used to be assassins who are now trying to live normal lives and pay the bills and keep their kids safe.
Mm-hmm.
And I really enjoyed this book.
It's incredible. I loved this. This was so fun. This is exactly very, very for me.
Yeah. It's like there's a lot going on in this book. It's a very character focused book. The main Assassinista is a mother who has a teenage son, a college age son, whatever age that may be, who she, you know, is constantly struggling to pay the bills for, even though she insists that he goes to college, and he has a boyfriend that he hasn't told her about. There is going to be some action in the future, but if it was just like discussions between all these characters,
family dramas, and no assassinations really, really take good. Place.
I love Gilbert Hernandez's art.
It's so gorgeous, and the colors by Rob Davis really, really exactly. make it pop.
But so you know, it's rare to actually see beyond a cover either of the Hernandez brothers' art colored. So this is a real treat.
Really and, is, and I'm excited to see this like mother son. And boyfriend assassination team that seems to be happening. Finally. That's super fun. That's a really good fun thing. I'm into it. Really, Teenie really Howard, good. I really like, I think.
Yeah, like me too. This is a big highlight of the week for me. We also got another IDW book, The Return, the Volume 2 of a series that I'm pretty sure you didn't read. That is the Comic Book History of Comics.
No, I didn't read it.
So this is written by Fred Van Lente with art by Ryan Dunlavey. It was originally released as like a graphic novel with black and white cartooning. Basically, it is a history about comics all over the world. And the best thing about it is Van Lente is able to kind of flick between not only kind of like genres of comics, but also like around the world and what was happening throughout the world in terms of comic books, and this issue is mostly about Europe. And,
cool.
And kind of who was responsible for the term graphic novel. Was it Eisner or was it actually Switzerland's Rodolf Topfer in the 1800s, which is a character that a real life character that I've never heard of in my life. But we then kind of learn the history of Hergé, who created Tintin, and how at one point he was jailed as a Nazi sympathizer, and who cleared his name. It kind of talks about the influence of heavy metal, the French released anthology of comics, and how that was so after Star Wars that the sales of that skyrocketed in America, kind of all the different copycats off the back of that. It's a really, really fun book. I feel like I would be happy just reading the text. I don't think the cartooning is particularly of much merit. It's very, very like, Sunday morning paper strip kind of cartooning, which, it's good in its own right, but it's not the kind of cartooning that I seek out. The information that you're getting and the way that Van Lente has like really effortlessly kind of moved from, you just see all these different creators show up throughout time, in different parts of the world. And it's really, really great. He kind of explores different themes throughout times in comics. I can't recommend this as a resource enough. Highly recommend it. The Comic Book History of Comics. And this is the first issue of Volume 2. Over to Dark Horse now. And we got a new miniseries the first of the new miniseries from the Empowered Universe, which is written by Adam Warren, with a new cartoonist. Every now and then, once a year, he does one of these miniseries with a new artist that he hasn't really worked with in the past. And this time he is working with someone called Carla Speed McNeil, who is best known for the comic book Finder, which is like a science fiction comic book writer and artist. Mm-hmm. This book is called Empowered and Sister Spooky's High School Hell. Did you read this?
I sure did. I loved it.
It was super great.
So I Sister love Spooky. Carla Speed McNeil. I think she's incredible.
Have you read anything of hers besides Finder?
No, that's it. But I love her work.
It's very different to what Adam Warren normally does, but she does a great interpretation of his character designs. And this is this fun kind of adventure in which Sister Spooky, who at one point was Empowered's kind of biggest rival, Sister Spooky was gifted her powers by like the devil. She was like an ugly schoolgirl who was gifted the powers of being hot, and then he also gave her superpowers just to fuck with everyone, all the other girls at her school that were white girls that just got like hot powers too. Well, not hot powers. They just
became hot.
Exactly.
Which is and a so power.
This sees Empowered and Sister Spooky basically like teleported to like a hell based version of Sister Spooky's high school, in which she has to confront and not get killed by all of her co-students who are out to kill her because she got superpowers and they didn't.
It's pretty good. Like, I mean, I think that my personal hell would also be going back to high school. So
yeah, definitely.
I think that they played on the kind of horrors of being an awkward dork in high school really well. And I like how Empowered and Sister Spooky's relationship has changed and how it's not now they're just friends, like it's sort of more complicated. And how much Empowered has like developed as a character.
That was my so favorite good. Thing of this. I actually enjoyed this one issue of Empowered more than that actual proper Empowered volume we got last year or this year, whenever it was. I think you got way more character development in this issue than an entire book did earlier in the year.
And it looks beautiful.
It looks incredible. Carla did the colors too. Very good.
Gorgeous.
Great issue. Real good. We also got from Dark Horse a late Christmas special, which I actually read now, which is not so after Christmas.
But what a special!
Holy fucking hell, it was good.
I think the biggest thrill for me was opening the front page and seeing interiors by Adam Hughes. That's so rare.
So this is a Hellboy Krampusnacht, which is, I guess, the night of the Krampus.
Yeah.
And Krampus is the weird European Christmas ghost. Christmas demon who, taunts children.
The original Claw series. That's got Krampus in it.
And so, yeah, it was written by Mike Mignola, which is really cool, and no co-writer or anything. It's just written by Mike Mignola with art by Adam Hughes, who, as Siobhan said, is, you know, rare to actually see on a book these days. He did that not very good Betty and Veronica series that he wrote and drew. Oh, no, you grew to quite warm to that, didn't you?
Yeah, the last issue really, like, as a whole product, I think it ended up quite good.
But, you know, he's quite known for his cupcake, you know, kind of swimsuit.
Cheesecake, but yeah.
Cheesecake, sorry, cupcake, whatever the fuck.
So, delicious cake. I loved his interpretation of Hellboy.
That's exactly it. Like, he's not someone I would ever expect to take on Hellboy. And he does a great job of honoring Mike Mignola's, you know, use of shadow and, you know, even the original designs of the character, but with his own great spin on it. It's just unmistakably Hughes. And this is a really, really great story too about like a goat who believes he's Krampus that summons Hellboy to put him out of his misery, and then we get this like cute little backup of Hughes drawing a couple of snapshots from various Christmas memories that Hellboy had throughout his life with the RPD and stuff.
The baby Hellboy one is so cute.
Yeah, so good. What does he get for a gift? A Lobster Johnson decoder ring.
Awesome.
So good. And then you even get like a few pages of sketches. This is a very good value little issue as well. Great one shot. Only $3.99. 100% worth your money.
Absolutely agreed.
I love this.
Really,
this is,
enjoyable.
This is like of all the Christmas specials that we read, this is like the only one I would say is essential reading for someone that just wants to read a good comic.
Agreed.
Over to Arkea now, and we got the latest volume of Jim Henson's The Storyteller, which is written and drawn by Matt Smith. This edition is called Fairies, and it is four issues that are all about... They're basically four one-shots in which Jim Henson's character, The Storyteller, tells stories to his dog, and in this issue he tells him a story of a shepherd who goes to work on a new property that's been cursed. And once a year, the shepherd goes missing and dies. And in spite of this, the shepherd still takes the work and then learns the truth of what's happening to all the shepherds. Whoa. It was a really, really dark issue.
That's really dark.
It was brilliant. It was so good. Oh, Matt Smith is such a good cartoonist. And
the Storyteller comics are always excellent.
I've never liked them before this one. Really? I've tried my hand at reading the first issue of like the last two series they've put out since we started recording the show, and it didn't really connect with me at all. But I really loved this issue a lot because I guess maybe it was so dark, and then it would cut back to the storyteller talking to his dog about something inane that you know, he picked up from within the story. So this story was called The Fairy Queen and the Shepherd. And definitely comes with my recommendation, especially if you, like me, have given the series a shot and it hasn't connected with you in the past. I love this.
Oh, cool.
Aftershock this week put out a new book by Justin Jordan with art by Eleonora Collini called Backways. Did you read this?
No, this was on my... This was the top of the things I missed.
I don't think you need to read it. Basically, a girl is sucked into a mirror dimension.
She's
like a goth girl, and then her girlfriend... against the missing girl's mother's wishes, is basically trying to track down her girlfriend, and I think she's a girlfriend, maybe just a close friend that her parent doesn't approve of, and eventually she gets to this weird nightmarish mirror dimension. Look, the art was pretty good, and I think the story, it's just a lot more tropey than I'm used to for Justin Jordan's work, but hey, Aftershock always kind of put out like the fourth best comic from your fourth favorite creator.
That should be on their website.
Yeah. I tried reading a book called The Eternal Thirst of Dracula.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
That sounds exactly. Sexy.
I read a few pages and I was like, I don't need to read this.
Nice. Good call.
What I do need to do, Siobhan, is let everybody know that if they want to discuss any of the number one issues that they read or we read and if you reckon we got opinions wrong or opinions right... mostly wrong though. Come and hit us up at our Facebook group, which is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast, in which you can join a few thousand comic book readers who talk about comics all the time, even when we don't.
Yeah.
And it's a great place to, it's a great fountain of knowledge in terms of comic books and creators and runs and, you know, recommendations. It's a very lovely and positive place.
It sure is. And if you're a lady, we have a, or identify as female or non-binary, there is a Queens of Kings group. So if you want to talk to he just want to shut all of the dude bros up. I'm joking.
If you listen to half of this podcast and think, that's the half for me.
we try very, very hard.
Yeah, we try very, very hard to keep the serious issues page. You know,
it's legends only.
Yeah, but you know, I'm very aware of how men very often will talk over women in terms of geek culture and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in spite of my best efforts, sometimes it still goes on in our very group.
And the Queen's page is incredible for just really like friendly, open, intelligent discussion. It's been real good fun running that one.
Extremely jealous that I can't be a part of it. But hey, you can't have anything.
It's true.
I can't even have a wallet.
You can't even get a wallet.
Let's play a game called Roll the Dice, Siobhan. Every episode we roll the dice to find out who we're going to talk about next. If I roll a 1 to 2, it's Image. If I roll a 3 to 4, it's Marvel. If I roll a 5 to 6, it's DC. Rolling this dice right now.
Nice.
And put a bit of spin on it. Two spin. Too much spin. It's just tedious. 6. We're going to talk about DC first. And then another spinner. When will I learn? 1. So we're going to do DC, then Image, then Marvel.
Cool.
Starting off with DC, I want to talk about a book that I really loved because I did not like a few DC books this week, and I do not want to come across like a sourpuss.
Sourpuss Levins.
Let's talk about Justice League issue 35, written by the aforementioned Christopher Priest, with art on this issue by Pete Woods. You know, he does the inks, he does the colors.
Cool.
It's pretty cool. That's rare for a DC published superhero book. And this is the second issue of Christopher Priest's Justice League run. As anyone who's listened to the podcast in the past will have known, Justice League was not the best at all since Rebirth happened. It was a very kind of weird misstep from the very word go that kind of never really got very interesting. Into just two issues, Christopher Priest has made this one of my favorite DC books.
Totally. He is so good at balancing this team and giving everyone a good moment and having it be not just tedious, like, action stuff. There's plenty of action, but he's trying to actually tell a larger story.
And he's using the Justice League kind of base. What's it called again? The
Watchtower.
The Watchtower, which I feel like is such an important part of what makes the Justice League different from the Avengers. They're not just a bunch of, you know, heroes running out of a house.
Yeah.
They teleport there. It's great. And there's someone like watching over them at all times from the Watchtower.
They look down on us because they're better than us.
But I love that, you know, I think it's a really important part of the Justice League is when to sideline certain characters,
mm-hmm.
to bench them and have them kind of, you know, giving other members orders or, you know, some of them almost act as like reporters or whatever, you know, journalists or whatever within this story, trying to find out more facts. Basically, this is all kind of like teetering towards what's it called, like the people versus Justice League or something, and it kind of suggesting that Batman has made a big mistake that has fucked up the Justice League.
And those are some of the best Justice before. League series is what? When Batman fucks up.
Yeah, totally.
Tower Babel,
it's a good theme.
OMAC Project.
I want to give this a special shout out because it is the first mention of one of my favorite DC characters, Martian Manhunter.
I know.
He wasn't actually in this issue, but a character who I'm not familiar with. He is like a bounty
might be
hunter
a
from
white
space.
Martian. That's my
called Skip Tracer.
Yeah, I don't know who that is.
But he comes to the Watchtower asking to speak to Martian Manhunter, and they're all and Jessica Cruz is like, I don't know who that is. And then Batman says, we haven't heard from Martian Manhunter in a long time, which is great because I just thought he wasn't even a part of the universe at this point. And it's also great because it means they haven't really, I was worried that you know, we're going to tie him into like some bullshit Knight's Metal, you know, what Doomsday Tower, Doomsday Clock, whatever. Big revelation thing, but if they just work him really naturally into this series eventually, that's great.
Yeah, absolutely.
This character's name isn't Skip Tracer. He's you can be a Skip Tracer.
Ah. There you go.
There's a bunch of bugs that are attacking San Francisco, and a ragtag bunch of Justice League members and Kid Flash team up to take down the bug with the help of this bounty hunter.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, as we saw in the first issue, a terrorist has killed a nun with Wonder Woman's sword, and the footage was recorded, and everyone in the world is seeing this footage, and it's going to damage the reputation of the league.
Seems like a confusing one. Like, yeah, you can't really blame Wonder Woman for a nun getting killed. I mean, she didn't stab the nun.
I mean, you can blame the sword.
Yeah.
Behead the sword, I say.
I agree.
Kill Exile the sword. Impeach the sword. But I just think that this is, like, so fun and, like, so much is going on in this issue. I think Priest is better at balancing the multiple plot lines in this than he is in even Deathstroke.
Agreed.
It didn't take me long to kind of remember what happened in the last issue while I was reading this one, which I think is a very important part of, you know, writing a superhero book with coming out, you know, week to week with multiple plot threads.
Yeah,
and
really good
recap
fun.
Page. Yeah, really, really good. So we also got a new event that started this week, which is spanning across three titles. Superman, Super Sons, and Teen Titans get the Super Sons of Tomorrow event, which has been written by Peter Tomasi and Patrick Gleason. Unfortunately, Patrick Gleason is not doing art on any of these books, which is a real bummer. But this week we got part one and part two in Superman and Super Sons, respectively. Basically, this is them reusing the future version of Tim Drake, who's become Batman, as a threat. Why the fuck would you do that again?
I don't know. Well, I think that this is part of them trying to bring back all these characters that everyone misses. So I think this is some way to try and reincorporate the Geoff Johns era of Teen Titans into the current DCU. That's what it sort of... It feels like they're doing something to get to that point rather than trying to tell a real story. That's how I feel it is.
Yeah. Like, I didn't think either of these issues were good, but I'm still going to read the entirety of this event just because, it, you know, there is something fun about a big, dumb crossover event that I just find irresistible sometimes. But this is also
the
kind of book that... Yes, exactly right. If I was only buying Superman or Super Sons, this would turn me off both, like, the series altogether.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm only rereading this happily because we do the show.
It's like they've been reading my dream journal at DC, because in the end of the second issue, which was Super Sons? Yep, Super Sons 11 is part two, and we see Connor, Cassie, and Bart... the future versions of those Teen Titans who were evil at some point.
But it's just really weird, like, reusing this future Tim Drake again, because it undoes his motive in Detective Comics, because why wouldn't he come back and try to kill Batwoman again?
Yeah.
Because that was... Like, why is this more important? Like, I don't... Like, he came back... It's like, you know, it feels like 10 minutes has passed since he was last back trying to kill someone to prevent something from happening in the future. And that he wasn't successful then, so why has he come back to do exactly the same thing? Like, I feel like you could... It would be way better if just Connor came back. He was the one that came back. And not to kill... Like, you know, having someone come back to the future to kill somebody. I've read so many comics where that's happened.
I feel like it never fixes it, guys.
Like, how amazing would it be if, like, you know, turns out Tim Drake returned to his time or whatever and saw Connor and was like, this is a world without you in it. And Connor's like... Fuck yeah, I'm going to go to this world because I hate this one.
Yeah.
And then that's how this book starts, with him being kind of found out and trying to go back to his friends and then being like, who the fuck are you? I don't know. Maybe that's not as good as I think it is, but I assume comic book writing is difficult.
it seems tough, given what a tough time two really seasoned creators seem to be having with this series. I think it's hard trying to do it. These crossovers where it just spans across a number of titles, I find a bit of a headache. I would rather it was just its own standalone series.
Make it a better villain than the guy that we just saw show up in Detective Comics for an hour.
Yeah, they just beat him.
It's really weird.
It's real weird.
I will update you on that. I've already got the comics for next week in my house, so I will be reading that part three of this as soon as we finish recording.
Hell yeah.
I already scanned through the new issue of Savage Dragon to see what disgusting sex scene there was this time.
Yeah. How'd it go?
I'll let you know next week. It's slightly disgusting. Batman 37 this week, written by Tom King with Clay Mann and Jordi Belair on art, is the story of the double date between Batman and Catwoman.
Batman has some Greg Land style bosoms on this cover.
Enormous buzzies. And Clark Kent and Lois Lane, Supes and Lois, And basically, after, you know, a lot of coercion, the four of them show up to go to the Gotham County Fair after Clark had a great time with his family at the Hamilton County Fair. Only because Gotham is Gotham, it's superhero night when they get there, and you're not allowed in without a superhero costume. So the entirety of this book is basically built around the fun out of putting Clark in the bat suit and Bruce in the Superman suit. And then Lois and Catwoman swap clothes as well for some reason, and Catwoman just wears the Lois Lane dress and says meow.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really bizarre and weird, but funny.
Yeah. This issue was odd, I found. I don't know if it was like the artist had trouble communicating what Tom King wanted to do, but I found it quite difficult to read in some parts. Like when there's sort of two conversations going on at the same time. Like we get one panel where it's... And I understand that he was trying to show the similarities between the two conversations that are happening between Lois and Catwoman and Batman and Superman, but I just didn't think it worked especially well for me.
I didn't find it difficult to read. Like, you know, it definitely took a little bit more careful reading than I would usually dedicate to a superhero book, but I was very distracted by the fact that he repeated panels a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like he kind of reuses exactly the same panel of each of them eating ice cream, almost like a pop art artwork.
Yeah.
Over the course of some pages, which I don't know if that was an artistic choice or he was just pressed for time. But I think, yeah, like this is definitely an odd issue. I think it's kind of meant to be an odd issue because it's a date between these superheroes and it's not really furthering their plot along at all, which is what Tom King kind of excels at, I guess.
I found it real boring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I feel sad Trarian. About it, but...
The Tom Trarian.
It just like... He makes them really boring characters. They're just really normal. And, like, the stupid little... I don't think he can write women especially well. Maybe I'm just being overly critical. But the conversation between Lois and Catwoman where they're like, these boys, they have so many problems. Yeah, that's true. But they also have so many abs. Right? Yeah. Right?
Yeah, okay, I will 100% give you that one. I didn't think Lois and Catwoman were very strong in this in this issue at all. But I really did like the dynamic between Superman and Batman.
Yeah.
On their date in each other's costumes.
I wish they were just going on a date. I wish that they would just cut all of the nonsense and Clark and Bruce
cut these
can
women
finally,
out of their lives.
Finally do what we've all been waiting for 75 years. Make out.
Fantastic. Dark Knight's Metal continued this week. Issue number 4, after a seemingly endless amount of Dark Batman number ones.
Mm.
We finally got the 4th issue of this series. Written by Scott Snyder, with art by Greg Capullo, Jonathan Glapion, and FCO Placentia. I fucking hate this book.
Who knows what's going on?
This book is just be called Dark Knight's A Journey Up Scott Snyder's Butt.
It's not as fun as I wanted it to be. Like, the first two issues were
so good.
Bonkers, yeah. And so enjoyable because you were just like, I don't know what's going on, but Darkseid's a baby and Plastic Man's an egg. Great. But now it's just sort of like this dreary trudge through Sandman and old Batman.
Why the
Batman
fuck is he even there? Like, yeah, it's really weird. And there's so much going on. And like, on one hand, I find it admirable that he's clearly written a lot of this book so Greg Capullo could draw a bunch of fun shit that he likes, because he's
a big
angry metal dude.
Yeah.
He likes drawing like people being real angry and metal. This story is just getting further and further away from something that I would choose to read.
Yeah.
And like, I can tell he's definitely trying to do something that Grant Morrison has done in the past. Like, you know, I feel like there are comparisons to Final Crisis even that you could make from this event. And just, you know, you could definitely say that Grant Morrison very often travels up his own butt in his books too.
It's exclusively where he lives.
And I like his being up his butt.
This is the thing. I enjoy Grant Morrison's butt. I don't like Scott Snyder's butt as much.
There's too much energy drinks in here.
Yes, absolutely. I think he needs to look at his diet.
But the most
extreme version of Hawkman and Hawkgirl ever. And I get, like, he's always trying to do this, like, weird animal totems.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Sort of stuff, which is something that I think Grant Morrison's also tried to do. I just don't know if Scott Snyder's nailing it.
Yeah. I love Snyder when he writes from his heart. When he does the sappy stuff, I fucking eat it up. I love it.
Yeah.
That's why I loved AD After Death with Jeff Lemire that he put out this year. Actually, I saw, we completely forgot to put that in Best Miniseries in our awards episode, but I loved that, and that's the kind of Snyder story that I want to read. But this is just like it's just extremely not for me, and I'm sure there are lots of people that this is extremely their shit, but it is not mine.
Yeah, I'm disappointed because I thought it was extremely for me, and I think lived up to the promise.
Yeah, totally. And like it's the ultimate kind of superhero comic book thing where like something happens and then you turn the page and there's this big reveal of a character just showing up out of nowhere, like at one point just like Black Adam. It's just like, ugh, like that's not really servicing the story at all.
Yeah, totally.
Like yeah
here, but more Mr. Terrific, please, which we're getting Jeff Lemire, which is probably the best news. I'm very excited about that book,
and none of those other books look good though to me.
No, they all look terrible, don't they? They all look terrible.
And it's so weird to see 6 books with not one female creator on them.
That's a great point. That's a really good point.
And I hadn't even noticed that. We've moved past that.
Yeah. Nope, we haven't. We need John Romita Jr. drawing a book written by Dan Abnett about a single black mom. I think that's going to be really, really incredible. I'm kind of excited about The Unexpected, which has art by Ryan Sook.
Ryan Sook. That's the Steve Orlando one, right? Yeah, that Sook's the best. I'm looking forward to that.
And at least DC have done a funny little thing of like putting the artist above the writer. I feel like that's a bit reactionary against Marvel, but yeah.
Well, I mean, a lot of these books just seem like Marvel books too.
Yeah, true.
Like The Terrifics is just Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. That the terrible looking one, what's it called? Damage. That's just the Hulk.
Yeah.
Damage looks the worst out of all of them.
It does. Look like Daniel the worst. And
Robert Venditti. Anyway, we'll see. We'll get to read them all very soon. Mm. The Justin Jordan. I was just gonna say the Justin Jordan book with Kenneth Rocafort on art is exciting, but then I saw that Dan DiDio is another writer on it, so that probably will not be good. We'll see, won't we? Another slight disappointment, but nowhere on the level of Dark Knight's Metal this week, was the 31st issue of Aquaman, written by Dan Abnett with a new artist.
What? I'm glad I accidentally missed this.
Stepjan Sejic did not show up this week. Instead, we got Riccardo Federici, who I think is a bit more suited to, like, you know, the Nexo Manowar, one of the kind of more paintedly valiant books that we've been getting recently. Maybe he's even done a book like that in the past. Sunny Go on colors. It's great, very competent art, but it's just pales in comparison to the vibrancy that we got from Stepjan's art recently that completely turned me around on this book. And also this issue itself is very much about the politics of the monarchy under the water, and it was a real slog, this issue. So hopefully we get Sebshan back on this book soon. It can be as good as it was just 1 month ago. Trinity, issue number 16. I read this as well, written by Josh Williams with art by... Rob Williams with art by V. Ken Marion and inks by Sandu Floria with colours by Dine Rubiero. And this was the Trinity teaming up with Deadshot, who... It just feels so weird saying this. At one point, Deadshot was my favorite character. Like, he was my that was my guy. When Secret Six was coming out, I collected all of the original Suicide Squad run. I collected the two Deadshot solo miniseries that came out. I got many issues that he pretty much every issue that he'd appeared in Batman of as well.
You just love Floyd.
I really did. I loved his costume so much, and I loved his attitude. I loved like the explanation of why though he is the way he is, and that is not the iteration of Deadpool at all anymore.
Mm.
In this one, his daughter's being kidnapped, which is so boring.
Mm.
Like, just because, like, and that was always like the cool thing. Like, even in Secret Six, like that's a threat. Like, the bad guy's finding out about his real family. Do you remember that great arc?
Yeah.
And this is just, they just go, wait, you know, they jump the shark with it, and it's like Batman promising to Floyd that he'll find his daughter, and they don't. It was a really weird Batman issue. But yeah, written by Rob Williams, who is doing the Suicide Squad arc at the moment that I've finally tapped out of. It's out of my life. I've purged it.
Good job.
But I think Trinity needs to follow in its footsteps. Well, I will not be purging Injustice 2. It's still really, really fun. Written by our very own Tom Taylor.
Australia's very own.
Yep. And art by Mike Miller. Colors by Jay Nanjian. You would love this. It's Supergirl traveling to Themyscira to rescue a Wonder Woman who's been chained up with Zeus's chains. And then meanwhile, the Flash is like in Australia walking down the longest stretch of straight road in the world, 90 miles.
Great.
But he has like some dampener that he can't use his powers or else Batman is alerted.
Right.
It's cool. I like it. Great. It's a much more fun, like if this was an event, I mean, it reads like an event basically, yeah, because Tom Taylor just has free reign to do whatever the fuck he wants with the characters. It's great.
Great.
Finally, I read The Wildstorm, issue number 10. Did you read this one?
I did.
Written by Warren Ellis with John Davis Hunt and Steve Buccolato on art. This is the reimagining of the Wildstorm universe, courtesy of Warren Ellis's bald head. I'm really digging this, even though this is a much quieter issue than we've got recently. We are learning more about the characters in this world. I highly recommend it. It's a difficult one to recommend month to month because it can be hard to follow. But John Davis Hunt's art is just stellar.
And, so gorgeous.
The story is becoming ever so slightly easier to follow.
And Warren Ellis is just having fun developing all these characters and making them as sort of flawed and horrible as he is. I love it. Good fun.
Yeah, the premise for this series is, what if every character in the Wildstorm universe was Warren Ellis?
They love drugs. Everyone loves drugs and swearing. Yay.
So I believe we are going to be talking about Image books now, unless you have a DC book that I forgot about.
No, that's it.
Great.
But I only read one Image book.
Oh my God, so you did not read, you're holding up The Hard Place, issue number 5, which is the finale. But did you know that another series that we loved also finished this week?
Yes, I did, and I'm. It's in my pile.
But I knew it was going to be
amazing.
Yeah, great, great excuse. So we got the finale of Headlopper and the Crimson Tower, which is the second volume of Headlopper. Technically, this is issue 8, and this basically saw our headlopping loving Viking with a giant sword and a witch on his backpack head up a mysterious tower. To take down, like, this evil king. And I won't spoil anything that happened in the story for Siobhan's sake and yours, dear listener. But
heads were locked, I assume.
That's right. Oh, my God. It was so great. And a bunch of, like, really cool robot technology shit. And the crazy thing about this issue, though, is that there was a misprint. And so there are like two repeated pages.
Oh.
So the story is kind of like missing a beat. But if you go to Andrew McLean, who is the writer and artist of Headlopper, if you go to his Twitter profile, you can find the missing page if you were one of the lucky or unlucky few who bought this issue. Great series. I don't think it was quite as good as the first four issues overall, but like it's still so motherfucking fun. And I just from an art point of view alone, like it's so unique and fun and dynamic. One of the best series that I read every time it comes out.
Something fun about a quarterly book.
What's that, sorry?
There's something fun about a quarterly book.
You're saying that because you host a podcast in which you have to read too many comics. So when you know there's only four coming out a year, it's the best thing in the universe.
It sure is.
So we got the fifth issue of The Hard Place, which is a mini-series written by Doug Wagner, who we previously reviewed and loved his series Plastic. And this also features art by Nick Rommel and colors by Charlie Kirchhoff. I want to start this review by saying that Doug Wagner is on the I Will Read Anything He Does list now.
Yeah,
And absolutely. So is the artist Nick Rommel. Definitely someone that is going to watch what he does next.
This is such a great series. Just a great little standalone crime book.
Yeah, about a guy who gets out of jail. He was a getaway driver and promises to stay out of that world, but is thrown back into it. And in this issue, we see him kind of get out of it somewhat conveniently. But I think, you know, if you've watched enough action movies, sometimes you just get like a good ending and, you know, a happy ending for the characters you care about. And in this case, this is exactly what happened.
Agreed. It was really satisfying, really beautifully illustrated. I enjoyed this so much.
I think I'm so used to image books not giving you the happy ending that it was quite refreshing to get a happy one.
Yeah, I was waiting for just everyone to die in a fire.
So, Siobhan, we're one issue away from the what I assume will be happy ending for everyone in Invincible, which is Robert Kirkman's long-running superhero comic that he does with Ryan Ottley. This week we got issue 143, the second-last episode of this... Sorry, second-last issue of the entire run and also of the arc, The End of All Things. This sees a kind of resolution after the non-stop fighting of the previous issues. And basically it's... We're learning what Mark is going to do with this, you know, the alien race that he's a part of, the Viltrumites, who are super powerful but have also had children on Earth. And, you know, is it safe having Viltrumites on Earth or do they need to go elsewhere? Is kind of like the final question this series is going to try and answer. This is a much more satisfying issue than the many ones before it. I actually feel like, you know, I wish that they had all the fighting stuff just wrapped up in like one big extra sized issue a couple issues ago, and then they just finalized the story like as thoughtful as this one has been. It's good. You know, I'm going to be sad to see this issue go because it's kind of been a constant, always having Invincible to read month to month.
Long running. It's so strange that it's finishing.
Yeah, totally. But you know, I bet you he reboots it.
Yeah.
What do you reckon? Do you reckon he reboots it with him as a writer or someone new?
I would be shocked if Image didn't take advantage of it being on their books because it's so beloved.
It doesn't sell that well, does it? But it is like the trades do.
Yeah, and it's consistent, you know.
So I'm very surprised that you didn't read this, but I assume you did because you knew it would be brilliant, and that's a good excuse to not read things, I guess. Redlands issue number 5, written by Jordi Valer.
This was like, just had the most mental week, guys, and so I was going through my pile like, I didn't read that.
Yeah,
I got my piles.
It is difficult when you're having a hard week and you're like, I've got to prioritize what to read and when.
Yeah.
But Redlands,
I read a whole bunch of trash Marvel stuff, so that's good.
It's always the case, isn't it? Redlands is the book about witches, written by Jordi Valer with art by Vanessa Del Rey. Look, the bulk of this story, which features the return of someone that all the witches owe a great debt to, was very satisfying, and we kind of learn a lot more about the three main characters and who they were before they became witches and stuff like that. But the back matter in this issue, like we've kind of celebrated the back matter of these comics, since they started basically. But the back matter of this is a diary, it's quite substantial. Like it's a good solid read. It's like 7 pages of diary excerpts.
Wow.
From, I guess, the main character of Redlands,
mm-hmm.
from before she turned to witchcraft, and this is like the world that led her towards this. I think this is her story. Or it's a story of a character who is now inhibiting her body.
Cool.
In any case, the back matter is just devastatingly sad as we see a girl forced into prostitution.
Oh, God.
And her writing about it. And it's kind of, you know, every time she writes, it moves substantially forward in time. And just the way she talks to the reader changes so dramatically as she loses, you know, her will to love life.
Great.
But yeah, it was really, really wonderful. In a dark and sad way. That's a great book. Really, really compelling.
It's so gorgeous as well. Like, it's so horrifying and beautiful.
Yeah, 100%. And look, I know we have a very beloved segment entitled Dong Watch on Serious Issues. But what do we call the female version of that? Moot Watch?
Yes, we now call it Moot Watch. Great.
Vanessa Del Rey is just incredible, beautiful, curvaceous, naked women.
She sure does.
Lying in a swamp. And it's like not sexual in any way, shape or form, but it's sensual. I don't know. But yeah.
Yeah, I think I know what you mean.
Yeah, it's very, very evocative art. It's great. Finally, from Image this week, I read the third issue of The Family Trade by Justin Jordan with another great artist, Nikki Ryan. Written with Nikki Ryan, with a great art by Morgan Beam. This is like got quite confusing now because there's no recap page and there's a lot to kind of take in on this big world in which they live on an island and there's like a family who kind of controls everything, but there's also a government, and then there's just the rich people that want to be in places of power as well. So there's a lot going on. I love the art enough to keep reading this for a few more issues, but I have to say the story is not doing much for me.
Yeah, it's a confusing one. Like, the concept's really strong, but I don't know if it's necessarily... I don't know if they're nailing the execution.
Yeah. So those are our Image reviews for the week. And now it is time for us to review fucking 15 Marvel books.
Woo! Fucking 15 Marvel books. My favorite Marvel book.
What was your favorite?
Fucking 15 of them.
All right, cool. So issue 100 of Tales of Suspense, which is a new mini-series. Part one of five, Tales of Suspense featuring Hawkeye and the Winter Soldier, written by Matt Rosenberg with art by Travel Foreman and colors by Rochelle Rosenberg. No relation, I assume. But basically this is all about Hawkeye suspecting that Black Widow, who died in Secret Empire, suspecting that she's not actually dead, and he goes on a mission to try and track her down after there are some, like, examples of like some hits taken out that have her calling card all over them, who also has those same suspicions, but none other than Bucky Barnes, the Winter Soldier,
and this both is the team of up her book. Ex-boyfriends.
Yep, so this is them fun. Teaming up, I guess, to find someone who may or may not be Black Widow, and it was a pretty good read.
I enjoyed this. I did not realize that it was Travel Foreman. That whole time, the way that it's been colored is...
Now you're flicking through going, oh, of course it is.
Yeah. But, like, the color, I think the way that it's been colored is really different to how his work usually looks. But I like it. I thought it was really good. I think Rosenberg has a good voice for Clint. Mm-hmm. So it was pretty good fun. I liked this.
Yeah, he's a difficult character to write after Fraction's Hawkeye run,
I think. Yeah, absolutely.
Because you can't have that guy be a hero.
Yeah, totally.
But, you know, I thought this is a good start to what will hopefully be a pretty good miniseries.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
But everything that came out from Marvel this week was overshadowed by the frequently best and voted best Marvel book by you, the listeners. The Mighty Thor had its 702nd issue this week, written by Jason Aaron with Russell Dauterman and Matthew Wilson on art duties. And
I mean, we need to have a conversation about how he writes Hercules, draws Hercules. It's
sexually?
Too much. It's too much for normal people to cope with. It's too sexy. I'm putting a stop to it.
It's too much for tired mums.
I opened that page and I was like, well, I can't cope with this right now.
Yeah, his entire body looks like a penis. And I mean that as a compliment.
That's what I like.
Dong Watch, Hercules in general. we see like Jane Foster as Thor challenging Hercules to an arm wrestle in order to get him to help fight alongside the Asgardians. And who should show up but none other than the unworthy Thor himself, the Odinson. And together they go. Well, basically, like, the Odinson, I love their dynamic now. The Odinson is like, I want my friend Jane to
get
treated for cancer and get better. I wonder if this, like, because everyone's like, this is all going to be, is this arc called The Death of the Mighty Thor?
Yes, it is.
It's not called The Death of Jane Foster.
No.
I wonder if this like saga is going to end with her going back to her hospital bed.
I think probably. That seems likely.
But, you know,
even, you know, I feel like however he chooses to wrap this up, whether they choose to, like, have Jane Foster, I almost think it would be, like, more beautiful and more poignant if she did pass away, because she chose to, like, sacrifice herself to help so many others. But however they choose to wrap up this story for her, I think they've done such an incredible job of making her such a well-rounded human character, and I love it.
Yeah, totally. Do you reckon they'll release a Funko Pop of cancer-ridden Jane Foster?
It's the one I'm missing from my collection.
Okay, I got a question for the ages. This also had big revelations for the Asgardians,
mm-hmm.
With the return of Freya, which was really exciting, and the return of Odin himself, as we see the Mangog here to basically bring Ragnarok upon Asgard.
So cool. That final page where he's facing off against Heimdall is incredible.
Yep. I hope Heimdall's okay. I love Heimdall.
I love Heimdall.
So the Mighty Thor is a character in the Avengers.
Good.
And she appeared in a crossover with the Champions this week, the finale of their 6-issue crossover called Worlds Collide. Are you still reading this?
No.
You made the right decision.
Yay.
Fuck this stupid book. this is written by Mark Waid with art by Humberto Ramos. In this run, they had to go, like, the Champions and the Avengers had to go head to head with the High Evolutionary, and the High Evolutionary turned the Vision's daughter, Viv Vision, into a human. So she is human, and her human form then sacrificed herself to save the Avengers. But in his grief, the Vision decided to remake a robot version of his daughter, and in this issue, it begins with them having a funeral for Viv Vision, and then the issue ends with the human version of Viv Vision face to face with a newly remade robot version of Viv Vision.
What?
So, like, look, I know we probably complained about Tom King, or one of us complains about Tom King more than anyone else who hosts a comic book podcast.
Me.
But we loved the Vision series.
It was
so
incredible.
Good. And who the fuck would have thought that this is what you do with the series?
Totally. They just ruined the legacy of that incredible series.
It's just bizarre. Like, it even ends with the Vision saying Vivian, and then both of them saying yes. And then the next issue is called Double Visions.
Nice. That's good,
though. Fuck this book.
That's good.
Champions is probably the worst book Marvel put out.
Oh, man. What's going on with Mark Waid?
I think he's just stretched too thin.
Yeah.
He's still... I know you'd have problems with it, but I like the ridiculous soap opera that is Archie.
Yeah.
And I've for the most part, liked what he's done on Avengers. And I even like, you know, the kind of saccharine, slightly dull Captain America issues we've got so far. But this is just... This is just no good.
It's no good. No bueno.
I am a big fan, however, of Uncanny Avengers, written by Jim Zub with art by...
Jason Isaacs. With a great cover by Terry Dodson as well.
Yes, definitely. I mean, Terry Dodson is incapable of doing a bad cover.
Correct.
Sadly, this is the last issue of Uncanny Avengers before all the Avengers books merge for that weird weekly Avengers No Surrender thing.
Yeah.
Which might be good. I don't know.
I kind of like that at least they're reining back a little bit on there being 5 million Avengers books. I think that's kind of a good call. But I don't know if there's much appetite for a weekly Avengers book.
I reckon kill off the Actually, that said, the regular event, I was just like, kill off the Avengers with all the Avengers book with all the main, the bigger Marvel heroes, and I'm looking at the team, and I guess it's like Jane Foster, Sam Wilson, I guess Peter Parker. Mm. I don't know. Who is it? So the current Avengers are the Wasp, Thor, Falcon, Vision, Spider-Man, and Hercules. Yeah, it's not very well known. But I love this team. I love the Uncanny Avengers. Rogue, the Wasp, the other Wasp, Dr. Voodoo, the Human Torch, Synapse, Quicksilver, Scarlet Witch, Beast, and Wonder Man. That's a great team. And this has been a really fun run that actually I think almost got better once Jim Zub took over for these few issues that he's been doing. So I hope he gets to stick with the Avengers after this. I like that Dr. Voodoo and Scarlet Witch are in a relationship now.
Yeah, great. I love it. I love how they basically had a conversation that where they were like, are we dating? Yes, we're dating. Done.
Yeah.
Sorted.
And look, even though this is a sweet little wrap-up for this team as we know it, I look forward to Jim Zub having his voice on an Avengers book in the future because he's very good at it.
And this is a solid run if you want to go back.
Yeah, definitely. A solid and very brisk run. Over to X-Men now. We can talk about X-Men Gold. I read this issue because in the last issue, written by Mark Guggenheim with art by Ken Lashley, Nightcrawler teleported into a rock, and yeah. I was like, "How's he going to get out of this one?" And he just goes, "Oh my god, a rock's in me!" And then he teleports away and says, "Whoa, that was close." It's like you had a rock in you.
Yeah, what kind of?
I don't understand how you get come back from that.
I also don't understand. There is a character in this that they keep talking about who I don't remember from anything. And I feel like I've read every issue of this run. And he's not at the beginning. Like, in the beginning opening page, the recap page, where they have all of the faces and they say who all of them are, there is no one called Ink there. I don't know who this Ink bro is.
Let us
but
know
I don't
who
like
Ink
him.
Is. I'm not going to read this book anymore.
No, me neither. But all the X-Men stuff's about to relaunch anyway. We're about to get X-Men Red.
No. Our listener Daniel let us know that X-Men Gold and X-Men Blue are continuing. We're also getting X-Men Red and X-Men Green.
Oh, for,
or whatever color it is.
For Pete's sakes, Marvel, don't you listen to anyone ever?
They don't put out 4 Pokemon games at once, named after different colors. You got to do 2 at a time.
That's a great point.
But keeping things X-Men for a while, we recently learned of the unfortunate cancellation of Generation X.
I am very sad about that.
A really fun and different book written by Christina Strain with art by Emil Carpina and colors by Philippe Sobrero. This told the story of basically like, you know, the classic X-Men trying to fit in his high school, led by Jubilee as the teacher with Bling, Quentin Quire, Nature Girl, Morph, Hindsight, and Eye Boy. This is a really, really fun kind of teen drama book with superpowers, which is a very, very good genre of comic.
Absolutely. I like the bit where Jubilee tries to kiss... What's his name?
Fucking Cauldron?
Cauldron, whatever. And then she's like, oh my god, I can't believe I did that. You don't even have a mouth.
Chamber, not Cauldron.
Chamber, there we go.
Yeah, I think this is like the strongest Jubilee has been written in a long time.
Absolutely. And I like how they've developed her in this series. I think that she's really good. It's really good fun.
Yeah, definitely. Even though it's cancelling, there's no reason why you shouldn't go back and read this great run of Generation X.
I agree.
And you could jump on board now for the final arc. Another cancellation is quite bizarre because, you know, he's... Even though I didn't like it, his television show was quite well received. And there is a second season just around the corner. Luke Cage, as written by the great David F. Walker, with art by Guillermo Sana and colours by Miroslav Merva, is being cancelled too. And I think this was a very hiccupy start, but it's really, really hitting its stride now. And it's quite a great great arc at the moment where Luke Cage is back in jail, but it's like a weird jail led by someone with mind control powers, and they're like mining all the time and he can't remember who he is. It's really cool. It's like Luke Cage without any of the baggage that the family stuff the character has gotten over the last while, which I didn't think I'd want, but I quite enjoyed this arc.
It's good fun.
It's a bummer. Look, David Walker is one of my favorite writers that I've discovered in the last 5 years, and it just sucks that, like, all of his books has been cancelled at Marvel.
Yeah. I think we say this... I mean, I feel like I say this all the time because from a retailer perspective, but as well as from a fan perspective, Marvel just needs to stop releasing so many books because none of them are going to sell well. If there's that many, if you're stretched that thin, just put more time and effort behind individual books and stop releasing 1 billion books every month.
Yeah, and I thought, like, you know, Luke Cage should be a sure thing, but he never really got the artistic talent on this book that would have made it a must-buy title.
Yeah.
And, you know, he was doing... Power Man and Iron Fist is one of my favourite Marvel... One of my favourite comic books from the last... Since we started doing the podcast. And, you know, that should have been... I just wish that someone at Marvel were like, we should just pay to make this happen forever. Because he had such a good voice on that. But hopefully we get to see David F. Walker given, another opportunity to tell a successful book. I think he'd be great on a Miles Morales book. I think he'd be good on an Avengers book. You know, he had Uncanny Avengers. Give him a real one. Anyway. or he should be taking over The Defenders, which is another book which is being cancelled too. It kind of makes sense because since Brian Bendis has been writing it, and I guess this will be like one of the final books he works on for Marvel. Mm-hmm. This is the one with art by David Marquez and colours by... and it's also had guest artist Michael Avon Oeming.
Oh, cool.
Which is really, really cool. I guess a long-time Brian Bendis collaborator, best known for his work along Brian is with Powers.
Mm-hmm.
This was kind of like we saw a lot of retelling of the way of how Kingpin kind of came into power, and when he kind of had his first crime boss killed that he was working for, and he took over.
Memories.
And so Michael Oeming draws those black and white flashbacks, which is really cool. But I got to congratulate Bendis on a pretty funny use of Deadpool.
Oh, gosh.
Because Jessica Jones hires Deadpool to try and find somebody because she doesn't think that they have the credentials to find them, or basically, like, you know, the underworld knowledge that Deadpool has, the connections. And, of course, he doesn't do a very good job and even shoots some of them. But it's funny without completely ruining the tone of what this book is. This is like a great final Bendis book, I think.
Cool. Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
I'm glad he's doing a bit of a good send off from Marvel.
And one of my favorite characters that he wrote during his Avengers run was the Hood, and the Hood mm-hmm. returns in this issue of Defenders 2.
Oh, cool.
That was a nice little surprise too. Guardians of the Galaxy issue number 149, written by Jerry Duggan with art by Marcus Toe. This is kind of like becoming not a slog, but it's just kind of plodding along, and I want something exciting to happen. And I know that a big event is around the corner, and so it just kind of feels like they're, like, you know, very slowly building towards that, which is fine. It just is. I don't really have anything to say beyond that.
Hmm.
And I've got Doctor Strange left. You got Doctor Strange?
Same. It's
written
final
by
book favorite.
Donny Cates with art by Gabrielle Walter and Jordi Belair. Doctor Strange issue number 383, in which the Sorcerer Supreme is now Loki. Doctor Strange has enlisted the support of his old friend, the Sentry, to take him to Asgard and appeal for help.
I love Gabriel Walter Hernandez so much. Gabriel Walter.
Doing...
What's his name? Gabriel Walter. I got it around.
Hernandez Walter. Oh, you're right. There was a Hernandez in there. That's very me, though, just adding a random sounding Spanish name just because.
Everyone sounds better if they're a Hernandez.
He kind of, in some like flashbacky scenes, he kind of goes against his kind of known style, which I really enjoyed.
That was actually by Nico Henricon.
Oh,
pages.
Shit.
That's why it's a very different style.
Oh, flashback artist, Nico Henricon. Very good. Very good eye. Way to read, Shimon.
Thanks.
I was like, this is very different. I liked Doctor Strange going back to Wong's house in this issue.
Yeah, I like how pissy Wong is. That's good.
Pissy Wong's great.
Pissy Wong is my favorite kind of Wong.
And basically, you think he's going to Asgard to appeal to Odin or to Thor or something like that, but he actually appeals to the World Tree, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, very cool. And I like this slightly sort of arrogant, headstrong version of Doctor Strange, who, even though Loki has been appointed the Sorcerer Supreme in like a totally... valid and justified way, he's still like, no, he's a bad guy, I know better.
Yeah.
So I look forward to this crashing down upon his head.
And Loki's like trying to do good too.
Yeah, totally.
He was chosen because they saw the good in him, that he was trying to do good. So the final Marvel book that I want to talk about is Deadpool versus Old Man Logan, written by Declan Shalvey with art by Mike Henderson and Lee Lowridge. And I know what you're thinking. Levins, you love a good segue. Why didn't you just bring this up when you were talking about Deadpool in the Defenders book?
It's a great point.
Stop thinking that, dear listener, and just roll with the episode. This is a good book. This is a good miniseries. Are you reading it still?
I miss this issue.
I reckon you could just pick up issue 4 and it would be fine.
Yeah.
But this issue has them basically captured and using the help of this new mutant that they're helping out. They're able to transfer Wolverine's skeleton into Deadpool's body.
Great, that's really fun.
Actually, Shelby's really good at writing shitty Deadpool jokes.
He actually makes a very funny Deadpool, which is so hard to do. I think it's hard to just be funny. Yeah, so I think he nails it.
So when Deadpool finally emerges from the room with his Wolverine claws snicked, he says, "Don't ruin this, Wade. You've always wanted to say this. Snucked." That's a good joke. So, yeah, there's, two more issues of this pretty good miniseries left. I'm enjoying it.
Nice.
All that's left for us to do now is to talk about the other publishers. I had a handful of books that I read this week, and I'm going to kick off with another series that came out and finished. Sorry, another finale of a miniseries that I read that Siobhan didn't. Came out through Dynamite, through their Atari imprint. It was Centipede. And it's written by Max Bemis, who is currently doing great stuff on Moon Knight for Marvel. Art by... how would you pronounce the name, which is E-O-I-N?
Owen.
Owen. Cool. Owen Maron.
It's Irish.
It's Irish. There's damn Irish. I got Irish blood, you know. I'm half Irish.
Oh, really? So why is your name spelled normal? Get out.
Yeah. Why isn't there an O in Levins? But... this is like a kind of like comic book version of the arcade classic Centipede, in which an enormous centipede is attacking the world forever, and it's up to one guy, the last man on Earth, to stop him. And it's part not taking itself seriously at all, but also quite heady at parts where maybe none of this actually happened, and the ending is quite open. I'm definitely going to read this again now that all 5 issues have come out, so I can read it a bit more concisely. I really enjoyed this, though, and if you are enjoying the Moon Knight stuff and want to read something else Max Bemis has done, first of all, check out Worst X-Man Ever.
That was
and
really good
check
fun.
Out Centipede, this one from Dynamite. Great art by Ian Marin, too. Unfortunately, after this and Sword Quest, there haven't been any more Atari books through Dynamite, but I hope we get more because they've been very good.
Yeah, they have been good. They've been getting good talent on.
Which is something that Dynamite don't always do.
Yes.
Boom always do, though. You always get good art on a Boom book, and that's exactly what we got on the second issue of Fence this week, which was written by C.S. Picat. Our C.S. Picat.
Australia's very own C.S. Picat, I was just going to say, she'll be visiting Kings in May for a special Queens of Kings.
In May? That's a long time away.
It is a long time away. But I've already arranged it, and I'm excited.
Very good. Art on this one is by Johanna the Mad, with colours by Joanna Lafuente. And this is about basically like a very camp manga-influenced book about boys going to fencing school.
Yeah. The competitive world of young men's fencing. And all of the
romance.
I love it
so much.
It's so good.
It's gorgeous, and, you know, the relationships are so turned up to 11.
Yeah.
So much so that like the coach has a list of words that she kicks she'll kick someone out. Actually, there's a lot of murkiness in terms of gender in this book, which I think is cool, but it makes describing the characters difficult. So I'm just going to say they a lot.
Well, I think it's very like, it's very manga influenced where this is a boys' school. I think the coach is a woman, but all of the fencers are boys. But there's one who looks particularly effeminate. But I think it's, like, in a lot of, school manga and sort of yaoi manga and stuff, there's often a boy who is very, very feminine in appearance. So I sort of... that's how I interpreted it, but I could be wrong.
The coach kicks out... you, if you use a certain phrase, like, saber is not better, which is a term of fencing, I guess...
Mm-hmm.
You get kicked out. You have to do 200 suicides. I don't know what that means. What's that?
Some kind of physical activity, I think.
Right, sure.
But you have to commit suicide 200 times.
Wow, that's insane. But one of the terms that you can't use is Aiden dumped me. And that is because Aiden is the most beautiful boy on campus. And in a comic book full of very beautiful boys, that's no mean feat.
This comic is chock full of extremely beautiful boys. That is how I would describe it. It is good
and
fun.
And I just love how ridiculous the drama is. It's so silly and camp and great.
Yeah.
This is an extremely refreshing comic to read when you have just read like 15 Marvel books in a row.
Absolutely. It is like the antidote to ultra like sort of hardcore masculine. If you just read Dark Knight's Metal and that has left a bad taste in your mouth, Fence is the correct palette.
Fence will chop it right out.
Absolutely.
Another Boom book we read this week. I hope you read this. Issue number 4 of Lazaretto.
No, this was also on my like to-do. I had a big to-do read pile, guys. I'm sorry.
So Lazaretto is a book written by Clay McLeod Chapman with illustrations by Jay Levang. This started out as a kind of like another college book, but when all the students get to college, a virus breaks out. And first, they basically like, yeah, all of the entire campus gets put in
quarantine?
What's it called? Quarantined. And now the virus is basically turning everyone, all the kids, into almost like zombies.
Mm.
Like skinless zombies.
But disgusting, like blood spewing.
Oh, well, no, wait till you see where they're up to now.
Oh,
it's,
man.
It's progressed. And you have like our two heroes trying to escape, but really just trying to survive. It's a very heightened, silly kind of scenario, but it's now kind of made the merge to full-on horror.
Great.
Which is really, really fun. Highly recommend this book, Lazaretto.
It's good body horror teen sort of puberty stuff.
Oh my god, there is some horrific shit that happens in this issue.
Amazing, I'm excited.
from Dark Horse this week, we got one of my favorite books of the week, and that is Sherlock, Francis Frankenstein and the Legion of Evil, issue number 3. Written by Jeff Lemire with David Rubin on art duties, doing an incredible job. Just the best job, really.
So, like, top 10 jobs of all time. He's so good.
And this miniseries is from the world of Black Hammer, in which we see the daughter of the character of Black Hammer basically investigating her father's death. And to do so, she's trying to interview one of his greatest nemeses, the one and only Sherlock Frankenstein. In order to get to him, she needs to interview a bunch of other bad guys. And so we're basically like learning more about the world that all of the Black Hammer characters are missing from, which is a real treat.
Absolutely.
All the characters have been really, really great. Great villains who are kind of now beyond the point of being evil. So it's quite, you know, sad and bittersweet as you kind of get to know them. And especially that we know what happens to Black Hammer's daughter eventually too.
Mm.
So even though it's quite a fun book compared to what Black Hammer is, there is this kind of very bittersweet notion where you know how things end up. But it is beautiful. It's very well written and it just looks fantastic. David Rubin is so good.
Really, really, really excellent book. Really excellent series. It's so great that it's adding so much to the Black Hammer universe without sort of taking anything away from the main series or splitting focus at all. I think Jeff Lemire is building up a really special little universe.
Well, it is taking one thing away from the universe, and that is the comic itself.
We haven't
had an issue of Black Hammer in quite a while.
That's true.
But there is one more comic that I read this week. Have you got any more?
Yeah, I have 3 more.
Holy shit balls. Well, I've got Dr. Radar, so nice. Let's leave that till last. You tell me about the 2 that I haven't read.
You didn't read The Beautiful Death?
What?
Issue 4?
Oh, no. Wait. Oh, I didn't realize it came out. Shit. Okay, cool. I've got to make sure I pick that up.
Well, I don't want to ruin it. It's so weird. I thought this was the final issue. It is not. There is one more issue, I believe. But it's all now coming to a weird head, and this weird sort of ragtag team have joined up to, like, it's so impossible to say what's going to happen. Like, go to their deaths, maybe save the world in the process, but probably just die a horrible death. But it's beautiful art, really moving and strange. I like this book a lot. It's by Matthew Bablé and through Statics Press at Titan Comics.
I'm quite annoyed I missed this.
You're a dummy. You're a big dummy.
I'm a big one. Like that dummy, but not a big one.
I also read Ninjak. I insist on calling it Ninjak. I don't care if it is Ninja K. It's Ninjak.
Ninjak's way more fun to say.
And I wish his name was Jack, not Chris, or whatever his name is. Colin. Colin, that's his name. Because he's British. British ninja. So this was issue 2 of the current series, which is written by Christos Gage, with art by Thomas Giorello, with Roberto De La Torre. Colors by Diego Rodriguez. And this was like the history of Ninja C. So if you know about the Ninja program, Ninja K is the K, number K of the Ninja series. And so this is all about how Ninja C becomes a bad guy, pretty much. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. It's not my favorite Valiant artwork. Book. It's got no blood shots in it, so I don't really see what the point is.
Has the artwork gotten a bit more vibrant than that first issue?
No, the colours are a little strange and it's very heavily inked and the art's not super dynamic, so it's a bit odd, but I still quite like it.
Ninjas are fast, therefore the art in a ninja book should be too.
That's true. That's a good point.
The final book we're going to talk about today on this episode is Dr. Radar, issue 2, European comic that's been translated and republished through Titan Comics' Static Press imprint. This is written by Noel Simsolo and art by Bez Yan, translated by Ivanka Hanenberger.
Nice.
This is the second and final issue of Dr. Radar, and this ended really suddenly.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, why did I even read this series? And I don't know why I feel like that.
It was such a dense series that if it took you a long time to get through those two issues, you wouldn't feel robbed by that. But I guess we're not used to two-issue miniseries, so it always feels a little bit odd.
Yeah, I guess if it said that it was like the same as this as the X-Men book that we read at the start. Well, we back-ended both. What's up, Shatterstar?
Shatterstar has a lot of opinions about Dr. Radar.
We book-ended this episode with two-part miniseries reviews.
Yeah.
Pretty interesting. But yeah, I think Dr. Radar, like, I loved the weird art and the incredible use of like four colors throughout the entire book.
I feel like we're going to see more Dr. Radar comics. I hope we do.
I mean, we are promised more, I think, aren't we?
It's a very open-ended.
The character says, I'll wager we've not seen the last of Dr. Radar.
Yeah.
That's what they say when there's more on the way. I definitely would read more of it, but yeah, I wish I knew that it was a two-issue miniseries, just because it wrapped up in an almost ridiculously fast and strange way.
Yeah.
But look, I'd recommend it. I'd recommend almost, you know, giving a look into almost everything that comes out of Static Press. Static Press.
Agreed. Along with Lion Forge, they're just doing some really great things.
Read European comics, everybody.
Absolutely.
So that is the end of the episode. Thank you so much for listening. If you would like more serious issues in your life this week, become a supporter of us on Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/serious issues podcast for access to, it's almost like 5 hours now of extra content of us reviewing graphic novels. I've promised an episode like the last 2 weeks and I keep forgetting to put it up, but a new episode for December of graphic novels reviews by us has just gone up. I was talking about some extra books that we read outside of the insane amount of books we already read for the podcast. If you would like to find us on Facebook, we are facebook.com/serioususepodcast or again /groups/serioususepodcast to join our Facebook group. On Twitter,
always,
we are at @serious_issues. And you can find Siobhan at @SiobhanCBG. I'm at @LevDog. We're both on Instagram on those same monikers as well. And our email address is seriousissues@kingscomics.com.
And as always, all of these comics come from Kings Comics and anything we talk about on the show can be picked up there.
And 310 Pitt Street in Sydney.
Like the King's Facebook page. KingsComics.com. We have some stuff happening soon. Kids' Day is blah, blah, blah.
It's Siobhan's job to make the King's Comics Facebook page good.
And so I do an incredible job, guys.
Go there, guys.
Good
go there.
Content.
Hit that. Don't hit the like button. Hit the love button.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. And look, our schedule for January, you'll get an episode from us each week.
Who knows what it'll be like, though.
This is pretty good. I was worried about this one, but it was good.
Yeah, I mean, I only didn't read like half the comics.
And I'm sitting in a 36 degree bedroom.
Oh my god!
Because it was a fucking stinker today.
It sure is.
A cool change.
I'm holding.
A cool change
a
is coming,
baby.
Everybody. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next week. Enjoy your holiday period.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Hey, folks. I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.